This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky, November 2010. At the beginning of last month's night sky, I recommended a book by Brother Guy, the Pope's astronomer, called Turn Left at Orion. And it was very nice to receive an email just the other day thanking me for that and saying they'd bought it and found it very useful. And I was asked if I could perhaps recommend some other books. So perhaps at the start of each of these little talks, I'll say something about a book that I like to use myself. And this month, I'd like to recommend a book written by Stephen James O'Meara, who I suspect is one of the best visual observers in the world today. He lives at Volcano on Big Island, Hawaii, nice and high and very dark, and he can see with a little 4-inch telescope things it takes me something like an 8-inch telescope to see from my home in England. He's written a series called The Deep Sky Companions, and the one I want to recommend this month is called The Messier Objects. The Messier Objects, obviously after Charles Messier, who made this wonderful catalogue of interesting objects in the sky, and it's published by Cambridge University Press. And it goes through all 100 or so Messier objects. It gives you drawings of what he can see with his telescope, tells you everything there is to know about it. So it is a wonderful companion to sit and plan your observations, perhaps on a cloudy night or while you're waiting for the sky to get dark. So there we go. Stephen James O'Meara, The Messier Objects. Well, it's a very interesting skyscape after dark and as the evening progresses at this time of year. First of all, setting over in the west, we have the sort of the summer triangle of stars, Deneb, Vega, and Altair, in their constellations of Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquila. And that's something we've been seeing throughout the summer months, but as the nights draw in, it's still there soon after sunset. Coming over towards the south, we have the great square of Pegasus. Pegasus, the winged horse, upside down as we see it. Up to its left, you have the constellation of Andromeda with our nearby galaxy M31, the Andromeda Galaxy, and I'll come back to that in the highlights. High overhead is the W of Cassiopeia, and working down towards the east, we have the constellation of Perseus. In between the two, if you search from Cassiopeia down towards Perseus with binoculars, and even if it's very dark just with your eyes, you'll see a little faint misty glow. And a small telescope will actually show that these are two lovely star clusters. They're called the Double Cluster in Perseus, and a beautiful sight. I've been lucky enough to acquire a 12-inch telescope in the last year, and the view I had of that from a very dark site, in fact, in the Cotswolds, was absolutely breathtaking. Little stars speckled across the field of view in a wonderful way. So do look out for the Double Cluster in Perseus. Now, what begins to happen later on in the evening at this time of year is that the lovely winter constellations begin to become apparent. First of all, even soon after dusk, you can actually see part of the constellation of Taurus the Bull. The head of the bull has an eye made up of the bright star Aldebaran, and it forms a V, and the stars in the rest of the V are called the Hyades cluster. In fact, Aldebaran's nothing to do with the Hyades cluster, it just happens to be in between it and us. But up to the right of the Hyades cluster is the rather beautiful little group of stars known as the Pleiades clusters, or the Seven Sisters. And those with keen eyesight can actually make out some of the individual stars, but binoculars or a small telescope will show them as a very little beautiful set of stars, one of the lovely objects to look at in the autumn and winter sky. And as the night goes on, Orion will be rising in the southeast with its red star Betelgeuse up to the upper left and down to the lower right, the bluish giant called Rigel. So there's quite a lot to look forward to and some lovely stars and areas of the sky to see during these early winter months. Well, what about the planets? Jupiter cannot, I think, be missed. If you look out towards the south or the southeast at the very early part of the month, you cannot fail to to see Jupiter. It's the brightest object in the sky apart from the moon. Its magnitude is at minus 2.8. It's now past opposition, so it's actually moving away from us slightly, or you could say we're moving away from it. So during the month, it becomes a touch smaller and a little fainter, but hardly. And with an angular size of 45 arc seconds, a small telescope will show a wealth of detail on the surface. And it is worth looking at, because at the moment, the South Equatorial Belt is missing, hopefully temporarily. It's happened before. And that actually makes the Great Red Spot rather more obvious. So if you haven't got a small telescope, it's now a good time to get one, just to have a look at Jupiter. And even with a pair of binoculars, if you can hold them steadily, you should be able to see the four Galilean moons that weave their way around Jupiter. Io, Europa, Callisto and Ganymede. Io is so close to Jupiter, it's racked by tidal forces, and the friction that results makes the interior molten. It's pot-marked with volcanoes, and we even have some pictures of active volcanoes on the surface. In complete contrast, Europa, the next outermost satellite, has an icy crust, although it does have some cracks in it due to the tidal forces. If you look close, you see the surface breaks up. It's a bit like icebergs, and we suspect there's a crust of ice overlaying an ocean of liquid water, kept warm by the tidal forces and a little bit of radiogenic heating from the core. So it's just a possible place where in our own solar system we might find in the future life. Saturn is the other planet that becomes easily visible as the month progresses. It passed behind the Sun at the end of September, so it's now a pre-dawn object, and in fact by the end of November it rises as early as 3 a.m. But it's best to see somewhere about 6 to 7 o'clock before it gets light. And that's not too difficult these days, is it? Because really the dawn is now quite late. It's at a magnitude of plus 0.9, which is actually a bit brighter than it has been the last year or so. And that's because the ring system, which reflects quite a lot of light, is now opening out again. It went through a period when the rings were almost edge on. They're now at an angle of about 9 degrees to edge on. So they're beginning to reflect a bit more light and also make Saturn look a bit more like the planet that we're used to seeing. So a well worth object to see in the pre-dawn sky. The other planets aren't quite so good. I hesitate to mention Mercury. Certainly from our northern climes, it's going to be so low at the end of November in the southwest after sunset, we haven't got much a chance to see it. But if you do live in the southern part of Europe or even in the southern hemisphere, then you do have a chance of seeing Mercury later on in November. And Mars is much the same. It's just visible in the southwest after sunset, but you'll need binoculars, so wait until the sun has set. It actually sets about 1 hour after sunset. The problem is that in the evening, the ecliptic is at a very shallow angle with the horizon. So even though it's somewhere away from the sun, its elevation as the sun sets is still very low, makes it very hard to see. Venus, in contrast, passed in front of the sun, that's called inferior conjunction, at the end of October. But in fact, it rapidly reappears in the pre-dawn sky, and you might even see it as soon as about the 2nd of November, about 30 minutes before sunrise. But in fact, as you wait during the month, it gets more and more apparent. And in contrast with the evening ecliptic, the ecliptic in the morning is at a nice high angle, steep angle to the horizon, and so it rises quite rapidly into the sky. And by November the 15th, it'll have an elevation of 15 degrees by sunrise, and you'll see it shining with its most brightness at about magnitude minus 4.9. That's the peak of its brightness. However, interestingly, Venus stays at about the same brightness, between about minus 4 to minus 5, virtually at the whole time we see it. Now, during that time, it gets considerably closer to us and further away. When it's furthest away, it's on the far side of the sun, and the disk is pretty well fully illuminated. When it's closest to us, there's just a very thin crescent. And it turns out that the apparent reflecting area that we see stays fairly constant, so the brightness stays constant. Well, finally, what about some of the highlights? Well, we don't have very many this month, but let's just quickly go through them. And many of you will know that November is a month when we have one of our prime meteor showers, in this case the Leonids, which peak around November the 17th and 18th. Because we pass close to the trails of the cometary debris from Comet Temple Tuttle. Now, sadly, this year, the moon is basically going to be at full moon just a couple of days later. And it doesn't really set on the 17th until about an hour or so before the dawn. So we don't really have a very good chance of seeing the Leonids this year. Early in the evening, and perhaps after midnight, you'll see perhaps some of the brightest of them. But the best viewing is probably just as the moon is setting over in the west. Leo will be fairly high by then in the east, and maybe if you look in that general part of the sky and upwards from Leo, you may have a chance to see them. November the 8th, after sunset, I hesitate a little with this one, but there is a chance, particularly if you don't live in the northern part of the UK and live a bit further south than we are, you might be able to see a very thin crescent moon and Mars in the southwest. You'll need a really good low southwestern horizon and, of course, a clear night. But about 20 minutes after sunset, with binoculars, if it's clear, you should fairly easily see the very thin crescent moon. And over to its right, you have a chance of just picking out Mars. But again, it's not one of the best times to observe. But it'd be nice to see a crescent moon so thin. On the other hand, by the end of November, we have a reasonable chance of seeing two planets together in the sky, Saturn and Venus. Now, Saturn I've mentioned before, and Venus I've said will be there in the morning sky. Saturn is going to be close to the 2.7 magnitude double star Gamma Virginis, that's called Porrima, and it's above the first magnitude star, which is called Spica, Alpha Virginis, if you want to be classical. However, in contrast to the end of last month, Saturn is now joined by minus 4.9 magnitude Venus, which is slightly below and to the left of Spica. So I think that's perhaps one of the nicest skyscapes to look for this month. Just have a look in the pre-dawn sky at Saturn and Venus, and it doesn't matter too much when you try, any time towards the end of November. Well, two final things. I've been saying a little bit about the moon on my night sky page. Just Google night sky, you should get it. And this month I thought, well, why not try and teach yourself where the mare on the moon are? So I've annotated one of my pictures of the full moon, showing you where the various mare, Crisium tranquillitatis, Frigoris humorum nubian, Nectarius fecunditatis, and so on. Some of them you can make out with your unaided eye, the man in the moon, but a pair of binoculars will easily show you these dark mare regions, darker because they're made of basalt-type material that's welled up from underneath the crust, the original crust, when it was impacted by massive asteroids way back in the history of our solar system. I mentioned Andromeda earlier. Perseus and Andromeda are nicely high in the south, and that gives you a very good chance, particularly when we're near New Moon, of finding the Andromeda galaxy if you haven't seen it before. Basically, you start at the top left-hand corner of the square of Pegasus. You move one star to the left, curve right a bit to the next star, about the same distance again. At that point, turn sharp right. There's a fainter star not too far away on the right. And then just the same distance beyond that, a faint star. But also, you should find, particularly with binoculars, a fuzzy glow. And that's the core of the galaxy of Andromeda. A pair of binoculars will show much more than that. And if you can get to a really, really dark site, it's a lovely thing to see. Another way to find it is simply to take Cassiopeia, which I said was high in the southern sky, take the right hand, upper right hand, three stars that make a V, and follow that V downwards with binoculars. Again, you should come across the constellation of Andromeda. And if you're doing well, it's really dark, you might retrace your steps to that star where you turn sharp right. Go the same distance again, and you could just make out M33 in Triangulum. It's the third largest galaxy in our own Milky Way group, but much, much fainter and hard to see, partly because it's at right angles to us. We see it face on, so it's not particularly bright, but well worth looking out for. So, good hunting during November.
for that, Ian. And here is John Field to tell us what you can see in the Southern Hemisphere this month.
With the arrival of our summer, the days get longer, but our nights become shorter. Rising in the east after sunset, we see Canis Major, Orion and Taurus. To the Greeks and Romans, these constellations form part of the great hunting scene of Orion. All three constellations appear upside down to Southern Hemisphere observers. The brightest star Sirius rises in the southeast and, at 8.6 light-years distance, is one of the closest stars to our solar system. Sirius has a faint companion called the Pup, which is a white dwarf, the remnant of a once luminous star. Just south of Sirius is the star cluster Messier M41. This cluster of around 100 stars can be seen as a haze in the sky with the unaided eye. In binoculars, many more stars are revealed, including a number of red giants. There are 109 objects in the night sky catalogued with the prefix M. These objects are known collectively as the Messier Catalogue. Named after Charles Messier, a French astronomer who, in 1791, created a list of objects that could be mistaken as comets. As Messier lived in the Northern Hemisphere, not all the objects in his catalogue are visible to us Southern Hemisphere observers. Many Northern Hemisphere astronomical societies hold Messier marathons and see if they can observe all 109 in one night. In 1995, a catalogue was created by astronomer Sir Patrick Moore called the Caldwell Catalogue, which includes a selection of objects visible in both Northern and Southern Hemispheres. Perhaps the most famous Messier object is M42, the Great Nebula in Orion. Visible as a haze above Orion's belt, M42 is the outer edge of a vast molecular cloud of interstellar dust and gas, approximately 1,200 light-years away. Stars are forming in this cloud, and we can see one area where the outer part of the cloud has been blown away by strong winds from newly formed stars. In binoculars, the nebula can be seen as a bright central knot with two wing-like structures on either side. The nebula is made visible due to the intense radiation coming from a single star, Theta Orionis. This star forms part of the trapezium, a group of four bright stars in the central knot. These four, along with many others, are visible in a small telescope. To Māori, these three stars of Orion's belt were known as Tautoro and made part of the bird snare, these stars forming the tree of a branch. Māori have different names and, in fact, different constellations formed from the same stars at different times of the year, associating them with seasonal changes, events, or images. On the east coast of New Zealand, the Pleiades, the Hyades, Orion's belt, and sword create one version of the Waka of Tamariri, the canoe of Tamariri. The Pleiades form the carved prow, the Hyades the sail, the belt and sword form the stern and sternpost. As they rise out of the ocean, they resemble a waka. This was the canoe that in Māori mythology, Tamariri used to sail across the heavens, placing Nawhetu, the stars, into the sky. As he sailed across the heavens, the wake of the waka formed Te Ikaroa, the Milky Way. At this time of the year, the Southern Cross is at its lowest in the evening sky, skirting our southern horizon. Akina is at its highest with the two Magellanic clouds, well placed for viewing. November sees an increase in meteor activity with the Taurus meteor shower early in November, and the more interesting shower, the Leonids, later. Meteors, or shooting stars, were once thought to be a meteorological event, gases self-igniting in the Earth's atmosphere. Today, we know they're associated with the debris from comets and other objects in our solar system. As the debris enters the Earth's atmosphere, it ablates, forming a meteor. Meteors are broken into two groups, random and shower. Random meteors appear from any part of the sky or any direction in the sky, and at any time. Showers happen at certain times of the year, and a number of meteors will be seen radiating away from a region of the sky for a number of days or occasionally weeks. Showers tend to build up to a peak and then fade away. The Leonid shower is associated with the comet Temple Tuttle. The radiant point of the shower is within the sickle of Leo the Lion. Being low on our horizon in New Zealand, we will not see this shower at its best, seeing only 30% of the number of those seen further north. It is best to observe them with a good northern horizon and a clear dark sky. This year we will have the added complication of a near full moon that may wash out some of the fainter meteors. This shower can vary greatly in the number of meteors seen each year, and they can also leave faint to bright trails behind them, so it's worthwhile getting up in the early morning to observe. If you do get up early in the morning, you may spot Venus and Saturn rising in the east in the twilight, and possibly, in binoculars, a comet. Jupiter is due north in the evening sky at the start of the month and well placed for observing with binoculars or telescopes. Uranus is still nearby, but the two are slowly separating. As both are now past opposition, they will get fainter as their distance from Earth increases. Comet Hartley 2 will be in our sky over the next few weeks and visible in binoculars and telescopes. At its brightest during the last 2 weeks of October, it was low down in the north in our morning sky. It is now climbing higher in our sky and moves into the constellation of Canis Major in the first week of November and will be near Procyon on the 6th. As the comet moves higher in our sky, it will become fainter as it is moving away from the Sun. Venus will be in the morning sky, climbing higher during the month. Mercury and Mars will appear low on our western horizon in the evening sky. We wish you all a good month of stargazing and look forward to talking to you again next month. John Field signing off from the Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand.